Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, you are listening to a Rattlegion Broadcasting premier podcast, Damn You Hollywood. And I'm your host, the man, data reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight we are reviewing Space Jam, A New Legacy, which came out July 16th, day and date in theaters and on HBO Max. Joining me today, wrapping up her week-long commitment to all things Warner Brothers, ladies and gentlemen, Alexis Haina. How do you do, madam?
What's up, Mark?
Very enthusiastic. So Sean and I have an upcoming on trial for the 1996 Space Jam, and we were generally pretty favorable about it. We had some quibbles here or there, but for the most part, we both enjoyed it upon rewatch. Did you watch it when it came out? Did you come upon it later? What did you think of it?
Oh, I was the target demographic when it came out. I loved it as a kid. I gotta say, looking back on it now, I honestly think this is going to be a movie that will be analyzed in both film and marketing classes in the future. The idea that this movie was a commercial for a commercial. It's just that this was a film that was purely made because they wanted to sell something. I mean, just this movie is capitalism personified. And I think it's really interesting to kind of analyze it like that.
So we've been following the production just because there were certain elements of it that made the news on Space Jam. There were comparisons made to it for like Ready Player One because of all the, you know, it was just chock full of IP. Obviously, there were comparisons to the original Space Jam. What were your thoughts as the news progressed and things unraveled and we got to see pictures of what this thing was going to look like? Just kind of walk me through really quick and then we'll jump into the plot. Your thoughts on what we might be getting with Space Jam, A New Legacy.
It was pretty clear that unlike the first film, which was focusing more on Michael Jordan's celebrity status, this one was focusing more on just Warner Brothers itself. Mm-hmm. Nothing against LeBron James. He is awesome. But I do not think he's as much of an icon as Michael Jordan was, you know, or still is for that matter. You know, hell, I'm not a big basketball fan myself. Mm-hmm. But so I know a little bit about LeBron James. I don't know much about him per se. But I dare you to find anyone who doesn't know who Michael Jordan is.
It's funny. I was thinking about this after we left the movie, how much I'm turning into my dad, because my dad's famous thing about sports, anytime I bring up sports, like I'll talk to him about boxing and he'll go, you know, I gave up on sports after the Dodgers left Brooklyn. It's like, I don't know. Meanwhile, there's me who the only thing I know about LeBron James is that he left Cleveland and everyone got mad. That's literally like all I can ever, like, if you ask me any questions about LeBron James, like I didn't even realize he went back to the Cavaliers. I know he left and everyone got pissed. And then like the movie reminded me, he went back to the Cavaliers and no one had forgiven him for leaving in the first place. And then, yeah, now he's on the Lakers, which I had no clue about either.
Yeah, no, this film seemed more of a celebration of Warner Brothers IP than actually celebrating basketball as a sport or LeBron James as a person.
Yeah, to my knowledge, they wholly invented the story. Like Michael Jordan's Space Jam at least.
That would have been an interesting movie.
Yeah, right. Draws a circle around his attempt to retire from basketball and play baseball and, you know, kind of fictionalizes that transition and then his return to his triumphant return to the Chicago Bulls. Sean and I talk about that at length on Thursday's show. This one, they seem to have invented out of whole cloth this story about, which somewhat resonated with me, about LeBron James kind of learning what it means to be a father and that, you know, just because you come up a way doesn't mean your children are going to come up that same way and how your parenting needs to sort of adjust to the realities of your world, not just repeating the same conditions and lessons you've learned as you grew up, if that makes any sense. And that did resonate with me because I've certainly been there with my own kids, you know, sort of thinking about how I came up And, you know, I don't want them to make the same mistakes that I did. So I'm very particular about it. But you also have to let people be people. And that's like the big message of this movie. I did, just to sort of go piggyback on the point that you were making. Yeah, this is a huge commercial for the Warner Brothers IP, to the point where, and I missed my cue for the joke, but I wanted to introduce this as we will be reviewing the intellectual property, the movie.
Pretty much.
Because holy cow, you want to talk about a commercial for something. I think Robert Winfrey sort of sardonically said the movie should have been called Please Sign Up for HBO Max.
Pretty and much.
With that said, we will go ahead and get into the plot and the craft review here. I can't imagine this is going to be a lengthy discussion. Certainly not 2.5 hours of Black Widow like we did. All right. So basketball champion LeBron James wishes for both of his sons, Darius and Dom, to follow in his footsteps. But Don, a child prodigy in computer software, instead dreams of becoming a video game developer, like all kids do these days. LeBron's wife, Kamaya, advises him to respect Dom's wish. While LeBron starts showing an interest in Dom's arcade basketball game, Dom discovers a glitch after performing a specific move, which causes his character to be deleted to his chagrin. Later, LeBron is invited with his family to Warner Brothers Studio in Burbank to discuss a movie deal, but LeBron dismisses the idea while Dom shows an interest in the studio software, particularly its state-of-the-art artificial intelligence Skynet. I mean, LG Rhythm.
Dom, otherwise known as the only actor in this whole movie, who is definitely putting in far more than is actually required of him.
In my head canon, now when I think of Terminator, I think of Don Cheadle as Skynet, by the way. That's never going to change for me.
Dom, you know, if Don Cheadle wanted to blow us all up, I think a lot of people would go along with it.
He would make a convincing argument, that's for certain. Dom expresses an interest in a future with Warner Brothers, leading to a blow-up argument with his father, while LeBron refuses to let him give up basketball. LG, who has secretly become self-aware, like you do when you're an artificial intelligence in the movies, and desires more recognition from the world, lures the two to the basement server room and traps them in virtual reality. He then says, acknowledge me, and Paul Heyman, never mind. Dom, that was a joke for the wrestling fans. Taking Dom as his prisoner, he orders LeBron to assemble a basketball team made entirely from fictional characters owned by Warner Brothers to compete against his own team in a day's time, telling him that he will only be released if he wins, and sends him through the virtual space where he lands in Toon World. Meanwhile, LG talks to Dom and begins to turn him against his father, like the Emperor and Anakin Skywalker, by playing on his resentments and helping him develop and upgrade himself and his game. He then tells him about the tragedy of Darth Plagueis, which he secretly intends to use against LeBron. LeBron finds Toon World deserted, save only for Bugs Bunny, who explains that LG persuaded the rest of the Looney Tunes to leave their world and explore other realities. Using a spaceship belonging to Marvin the Martian, LeBron and Bugs travel to different worlds based on Warner Brothers properties such as DC Comics, Mad Max, The Matrix, Harry Potter, Casablanca, and Game of Thrones to locate and recruit the rest of the Looney Tunes, such as Daffy Duck, Lola Bunny, and Porky Pig, into the Toon Squad. Over Bugs' objections, LeBron insists on coaching his new players on the fundamentals of basketball. The Toon Squad meet with LG's team, the Goon Squad, comprised of upgraded avatars of several acting professional basketball players with superpowers and led by Dom. To further the stakes, LG live streams the game and abducts countless viewers, including LeBron's family, into the virtual reality while summoning all the Warner Brothers characters to watch the game. LG says that if the Toon Squad loses, the viewers will remain there for eternity and Looney Tunes will be deleted permanently. The Goon Squad.
Apparently somebody saw Lawnmower Man.
I so want to review that movie at some point.
It's all yours.
The Goon Squad easily dominates the first half of the game using their powers to score extra points. During the break, Sylvester attempts to recruit former Toon Squad member Michael Jordan in the only laugh I got out of this entire movie, but accidentally locates Michael B. Jordan instead. LeBron realizes his mistake and allows Bugs to devise the strategy for the second half using their cartoon physics to catch up with the Goon Squad in an exact repeat of what they did in the first movie.
Except without the secret stuff.
Yeah. During a respite, however, LeBron confronts Dom and tells him he no longer wants to stand in the way of his dream, earning his forgiveness and trust as Dom abandons the Goon Squad. Al G assumes control of the Goon Squad and uses his own abilities to make them seemingly unbeatable. Dom suddenly discovers the only way to win the game is to use the move he previously showed LeBron, even though whomever does so will be deleted. During the final seconds of the game, Bug sacrifices himself by performing the move and enables Dom to help LeBron score the final point, winning the game and literally posterizing Al G, deleting him. The James family and the abducted citizens are returned to the world, while in Toon World, Bugs bids farewell to his friends before he disappears. In the real world, LeBron comes to see his family in a different light, supports Dom's decision to become a video game designer after dropping him off at E3 game design camp. He is approached by Bugs, who actually survived due to the fact that he's a fictional character and he can't really die.
We all knew Bugs wasn't going to die. I mean...
God. Hang on, because that's like my biggest problem with this movie. He asks LeBron to put him up for a little while until he can find a way back to Toon World. LeBron agrees, but Bugs goes on to ask if he can invite the rest of the Looney Tunes over as well. See, I think in the movie it said that he had already like invited him or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, so I don't. Well, it was kind of funny. I love it. It's like, so you think they can give you some carrot juice? They can juice anything you want. It was just, that part did kind of make me chuckle.
All right, so let me start off with this, and then I'm going to cede the floor to you because I don't have a tremendous amount to say about the craft of this. So I'm sitting here, I'm watching this, and I'm really trying to keep an open mind. I'm trying to not be negative. I'm trying to understand what this is, who it was intended for, and judge it on the merits of that, not judge it against, you know, fine cinema, which some people like to do. And so the movie ends. So again, just to sort of reiterate what set this up. So Dom does this step maneuver that LeBron teaches him in the video game. His character gets deleted. They think back to that and go, that's the solution. If we cause a glitch in the game, Don Cheadle's character won't be able to control things anymore. And they'll have a window of opportunity to blow up the Death Star. I mean, win the game. And So LeBron says, I'm going to do it and I'll take the chance of being deleted. What could possibly happen? I'm a real person. I can't be deleted. And because they gave nothing else for Bugs Bunny to do in this movie, he decides on his own to make the hero sacrifice. He makes, you know, he does the two-step, proceeds to glitch out. LeBron scores the final point, you know, reminiscent of Michael Jordan doing the cartoon physics thing in the first movie, and they win. And everything gets deleted. Now, here's the thing. And come here. Here, you bothered me before, so you get to be on camera now. Okay, so this child right here comes, like the movie ends, the credits roll, and this child comes running over to me, this 7-year-old, and says, Dad, they completely undercut Bugs Bunny's death by bringing him back for no apparent reason, with no explanation seconds later. What the hell, man?
Yeah, and like, why would they be even worried about getting deleted from losing the basketball game?
Right. If they could just come back. Right. Yeah. Perfect. You're a genius. Go away now. But yeah, like even a 7-year-old picked up on that. And it was so funny because like I was willing to just like kind of roll my eyes and I figured I'll talk about it with Alexis. I'm not going to bother my kids with this. Nope. Even my son was like, this is bullshit. you completely emotionally undercut the emotionality of Bugs Bunny's sacrifice to the point where it's utterly pointless in a way that made no sense. One last thing and then I'll cede the floor. I had a couple left. The Michael B. Jordan thing made me laugh the most. The only other thing that made me laugh in this movie was when Don Cheadle pulled at Denzel Washington. It was like, King Kong ain't got nothing on me.
And then King Kong's in the audience just like, excuse me?
Just huffs and harumps. I died at that. I legitimately laughed. The rest of this movie is so boring and is not funny. And lacks any of the charm that the first one had. I do have some positive things to say, but I want to get your kind of initial thoughts and response.
I know that this movie is made for kids, so you have to go in with the mindset that a lot of the jokes are not going to, you know, be drop dead hilarious. The scenes that made me laugh the hardest, mm-hmm. honestly, besides the Michael Jordan reveal, were honestly when LeBron was in Toon World and was still animated. The mm-hmm. scene in Metropolis with Daffy taking over Superman, I died. I freaking died. Not to mention after reviewing the Looney Tunes cartoons on HBO Max, plug. It was nice to see what we know as the Chuck Jones Daffy Duck get a return. More of the greedy, attention obsessed Daffy. The Daffy we've been seeing on that on the new Looney Tunes shorts is a little bit more of the classic, actually Daffy zany goofiness that we from earlier cartoons. And it's and I was like, okay, this is the Daffy from the more modern cartoons, and this is the Daffy I grew up with.
Did you immediately have a reaction of the Super Duck short?
Yes.
It's Super Duck, or my other favorite of that one, You Know Who.
Yes. Oh my God, of course I did. And I love that he roped Porky into tying up the conductor. Like, of course, Porky is always this poor Daffy's straight man. That and seeing Roadrunner and Wile E. Coyote in Mad Max Fury Road. Oh God, I fell over. I was laughing so hard at that.
I have to agree. I don't particularly like the setup because I think it makes Bugs Bunny kind of a shitty person. But the execution was the montage execution of them going to various worlds is the best part of this entire movie for me. It's the most, it's the part that works the well. And you're right. It is the funny outside of like the little one-liners here or there. It is by far the funniest segment of the movie.
Not to mention the thing is that LeBron James, we've seen him in he was in Trainwrecked and he's okay. He's not an actor, but LeBron James has charisma, personality and a good sense of humor and good and decent comedic timing.
I actually thought he did a great job here. One of the positive things I was going to say is I thought he did a better job with this version of Space Jam than Michael Jordan did with his. And I was actually very positive on Michael Jordan because I was like, you can't ask a professional athlete who's not an actor to do what most actors can't pull off, which is interact with animated characters. But I actually thought LeBron James's acting here was outstanding given what we're doing.
Yeah, given the fact that this is not a trained actor and he's only done like one or two other movies before this, and he's always played himself or a version of himself. Yeah, he was quite good in this, but I felt that he was best when he was doing the voiceover as the animated version of himself because, again, he is a decent actor, but there are so many scenes when they're in the basketball game. I'm trying to keep your attention, okay?
Pay attention to me. Pay attention to me.
I'm multitasking here, okay? But it's clear that LeBron, he's acting against green screens.
Yeah.
And figureheads and everything. And it's just very clear that he is not that good at doing that. And nothing against him. I've seen movies with actors who have been making movies for years suddenly doing a whole blue screen thing or green screen thing, and they just look like they have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. No one is ever going to replace the amazingness that was Bob Hoskins and Christopher Lloyd in Who Framed Roger Rabbit as far as being able to act against imaginary characters.
I referenced Ewan McGregor in The Phantom Menace and how, like, he could do it. He's a good actor, but how utterly frustrated he was and not feeling like he was acting in a movie.
Exactly. Actors need, it's so hard to act when you're the only one on camera and you not only have to imagine the background, but all the other characters in there. And you got somebody else reading the lines and everything, but it's not the same. You have to, react to nothing.
Right.
And again, LeBron James isn't an actor. So the parts where he's interacting with Don Cheadle and they're on the thing, he's doing a good job. And again, is there anything Don Cheadle can't do?
No, he's one of the best actors going right now.
Yes. And not only was he great in this, but it is so clear he's having the time of his life making this movie. I was telling my husband, I said, there's something about a movie, and I think I've mentioned this before on the show, when you watch a movie where you can clearly tell that the actors, the directors, whoever, are enjoying themselves and having fun making it. And there's the joy is almost contagious. So many scenes in this movie, it's clear that LeBron and Don Cheadle and even the voice actors doing the Looney Tunes are having so much fun. And when that happens, the movie is really enjoyable because you feel what they feel. Hell, you get the two announcers Ernie Johnson Jr. and Lil Ray Howery. And honestly, I've never actually seen Ernie Johnson Jr. I've only seen like Saturday Night Live parodies of this guy. So I was kind of like, holy shit, that dude's real. But even then, they're clearly having fun.
Yeah, so like my good, bad, and ugly with this. The good was, yeah, the going to different worlds was all funny and all worked and was just long enough, just short enough to where I didn't get, it didn't overstay its welcome. I agree with you. LeBron James is the animated character because he doesn't have to do anything with his face. That's all the animators. Comes off better than when he's live on screen. Two things. One, when the worst part of him performing in this movie is when he's having to interact with the CGI characters. The best LeBron James is when he's acting opposite the actor playing his son or Don Cheadle. I actually think he does a pretty good job of acting with his face and emoting and seeming like a real person in those scenes. And I have to give him credit there. The movie looks beautiful. It really does. I mean, it is like filled to, it is George Lucas style filled to the brim with CGI. But it is, in terms of color paletting, it's the most colorful. The other joke I was making, I was like, should I start off with this is intellectual property, the movie, or Jingling Keys, the movie? It is, there's so much happening on screen. It's a little overwhelming at times because, like, you know, so much was made of the cameo appearances, like the dude from Alex from A Clockwork Orange and stuff like that. Honestly, I missed half of it. It happened so, and I had to rewatch this because I dozed off through part of it in the theater. But I rewatched it this morning. There's so much happening on screen during the basketball sequence. It's hard to process it all. But it looks gorgeous. You know, I really do love the color paletting in this movie. Here's the bad. You know, Robert Winfrey kind of brought this up. In the original movie, they were fighting for the life of the Toons. You know, they were being sold into slavery. And I guess here, you know, they added tension of they'll be dead. They'll be deleted if this doesn't work out. I don't feel like enough. No, they aren't. Okay. Don't you believe it? I don't feel like enough dramatic tension was provided for the Toon Squad. It did not resonate with me. It did not come across. I think if you're a parent, you can kind of see where the stuff with LeBron James kind of resonates, but I don't know. The original Space Jam is 88 minutes long. It is a nice, tight movie. It gets its point across. It does its thing, and it is enjoyable. It is absolutely delightful to get through. This was 115 minutes long. This is almost 2 hours. Like, this needed another pass through editing. This is not well-paced. It takes forever to get the kids to the mall, and by that I mean you're going to see Space Jam because you want to see Bugs Bunny and LeBron James interact. It takes forever to get LeBron James to Bugs Bunny. And then when you get there, you know, you and I have talked about this with the Looney Tunes shorts. If Bugs Bunny isn't presented a certain way, Bugs Bunny is not particularly enjoyable. Of all the Warner Brothers Looney Tunes characters, he has to be presented just right or something is very off and it's not very enjoyable with him. In here, you know, the setup for the gags that follow is fine. You know, they were all coerced into going into different movies because Toon World sucks or whatever the situation was. Like, okay, that's fine. But like, I don't know, Bugs Bunny, it's like a lot of the Bugs Bunny, LeBron James early interactions are very forced to me. It didn't come across as funny. Like, they do the Rabbit of Seville bit. And like, I love the Rabbit of Seville. It's one of my favorite Bugs Bunny cartoons.
Yeah.
And I saw it here and I'm like, you just threw that in there because of people like me and you who recognize it and go, oh, that's, and we're supposed to go, oh, that's funny. The rabbit, they're doing the Rabbit of Seville bit, but they don't do anything with it. Mm-hmm. And I don't like the fact that, you know, the promise of this thing was you had LeBron James trying to get like Superman and King Kong to be on his team and Bugs Bunny manipulates him into getting the Toon Squad back together. And then they never really go back to, but LeBron James wanted Superman and King Kong. And it just feels like Bugs Bunny shouldn't have had an ulterior motive or his own agenda. That makes him kind of a shitty character. And then we get to the basketball game and they do nothing with Bugs Bunny. It was like he was almost, other than a line here or there, it was kind of the Daffy Duck, Lola Bunny, LeBron James show with a couple of jokes for all the other characters so that we could get them on screen. But then that's it. So I feel like this was not well balanced. You have these characters, these iconic characters in the movie, but you either do crappy things with them or you don't do enough with them. And so all that's left is LeBron James carrying this thing. And as good as he was, and as great as Don Cheadle is, not enough to really support this thing to where it is 100% enjoyable experience. It's like enjoyable in parts, but not as a whole.
I felt like they wasted the Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
I mean, let me put it this way. Among other gripes, you have when they go to get Lola, she's in a Wonder Woman comic book about to take the trials to become an Amazon. That's good. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's good writing. Because, I mean, everyone's like, they destroyed Lola. It's like, Lola had no personality in the first Space Jam movie. She was a sex symbol.
I would say Lola's personality was, don't call me doll.
Pretty much. I was like, okay, the idea, by the way, Rosario Dawson is Wonder Woman. Top notch. And I love that. And I love that Bugs is following her through the trials. Again, that was a really funny scene. But it never comes up again. You know, Lola's just all of a sudden back to being the bland, good basketball player. I think with the exception of a couple of moments with Bugs, Daffy, and Wile E. Coyote, they don't really take advantage of the Looney Tunes. Listen, we don't Wile really Coyote get to see was, them being Wile, loony.
Wile E. Coyote got the best stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this felt like, honestly, you could have cut Bugs Bunny and everybody else from this movie and just had it be Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner. It still would have been just as funny, if not more. Because
I can't even complain about that, because Wile E. Coyote is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, he got the best gags of the entire, like, there were some, like, him sitting his ass in the cooler and the sign comes up that says, don't ask. That got a laugh out of me. The, mm-hmm. you know, the what have I done? If I saw it in the trailer, I would have laughed harder, you know, with the basketball thing. Like,
yeah.
And when they come out in the second half and they're full of pith and vinegar, he does the thing with the train that hits the Condor basketball player, and like they close up on his face and he does kind of like, you know, like an eyebrow. He's like, thinking back on it, like those parts made me laugh.
Yeah. I mean, at least the first Space Jam, while I don't think not a really enjoyable film on the whole, they took advantage of the Looney Tunes.
Yes.
You know, they actually had them do what you would expect the Looney Tunes to do. They pulled the gags. They did what they were known for. We're not opening the can of worms here, but at least, I mean, they had Pepe Le Pew use his smell, and they had, you know, Elmer and Sam use their guns. And yeah, I mean, this movie, it felt like they wanted to make a Looney Tunes film, but they didn't really know what to do with them.
Correct. Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I feel like this was like the Space Jam doesn't feel like the Michael Jordan experience, you know, featuring a handful of Looney Tunes. I feel like that movie was well balanced as opposed to this one where it's like 90% LeBron James and 10% like, let's just get a gag in for this character so that we can justify their being in the film. Rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat, rinse, repeat. We're done. Like, and as much as I love Don Cheadle, they kept going back to him, and I almost wish they had minimized his character, kind of like reduced him to like a Danny DeVito character like they did in Space Jam, where he's there, he's a menace, but the film, this felt like the Don Cheadle movie. Not, you know, like between Don Cheadle and LeBron James, there was almost no screen time left for the Looney Tunes to do anything creative or fun.
And again, Don Cheadle's amazing in this movie, but the fact is, when we're promised Space Jam, what we want the Looney Tunes.
Right. Yes. Perfect.
I mean, it's like LeBron James, good acting, Don Cheadle, one of the greatest actors currently working, but that's not what we go to Space Jam to see.
I was going to say, then go watch No Sudden Move. By the way, we reviewed that here on the Rattle Legend Broadcasting Network. Plug, plug. He's fantastic in No Sudden Move, and that is also on HBO Max. He did not need as much screen time as they gave him. And then, just this is my last thing, and then I'll give you the last word on this, and we'll move on. He starts out okay. He starts out like not particularly insufferable. I was enjoying him as the disrespected Skynet. At the beginning of the film and in the middle, and the stuff where he turns into Emperor Palpatine and he's seducing Dom, I actually thought that was really well done. Like, mm-hmm. you know, his scenes with the kid, by the way, just so I can say this, the kid who plays Dom, who is
Cedric Joe.
Joe, yeah, he did a really good job here. I actually thought he comes across as very charming and very personable, and was able to do, you know, believable line delivery. So good on him. But yeah, I like the beginning of the movie, in the middle where he's seducing Dom. That's all great Don Cheadle stuff. When we get to the basketball game, I was like, oh my God, just shut up already. Just shut up, Don Cheadle. Can we please give Bugs Bunny something to do and give you a little less screen time? Mm-hmm. Him turning into, and I don't, I was thinking about, like, you know, famous professional basketball coaches, like, throwing fits at games. You know, they're doing a lot of those jokes with him, but it was
okay. Having him channel Bobby Knight, though. Okay, tell me you laughed when they had him channel Bobby Knight.
That's funny. What I was referring to.
Yeah,
I didn't
that
know
was
the
actually a good
name.
Joke.
I was thinking, like, and I want to keep saying Pat Sajak, but that's not right. That's Wheel of Fortune. Pat Riley, that's it. The coach of the old coach of the Lakers. But I don't even know if he threw fit. He's just the one coach I remember. But yeah, what was it? Bobby Flay?
Bobby Knight.
Bobby Knight.
He's wearing the sweater and throws the chair.
Yeah, that's okay. I did laugh at that. I just didn't know who he was. So yeah, just too much Don Cheadle and too much of Don Cheadle just being insufferable towards the end. It almost felt like midway through filming, they were like, well, LeBron's not great, and we don't know what to do with the Looney Tunes. So just give Don Cheadle more stuff to do. It's fine. We have this award-winning actor here. Let's just use him on screen as much as possible. And I'm like, no, you've thrown your whole movie out of balance now. And you took what was a kind of a funny premise, because I would have accepted intellectual property, the movie, had it been executed well. The problem was, it is what it is, and it's not executed well. And I'll let you have the final word.
Kids are going to enjoy this movie, and they're the ones that this movie is made for. There's nothing in this film that I would say is inherently bad for kids or for families. So I don't think there's anything truly wrong with it. And there was enough scenes in this film that did genuinely make me laugh that I can say I did enjoy a decent amount of it. So it doesn't hold up to the previous Space Jam, but it's not terrible.
Well, one last thing. There's a handful of pretty fun songs in here. You know, we have a cover of Pump Up the Jam. There's some stuff here by, like, Salt and Pepper and Chance the Rapper, Little Baby.
Did you ever listen to the original Space Jam soundtrack?
I was telling Sean I could not get away from I Believe I Could Fly.
Yeah, let's face it. A lot of people talk about that movie. It's like, I don't think people really give the attention to the soundtrack that it deserves. That was a stellar movie soundtrack.
Agreed. And if you want to check out that soundtrack or the soundtrack to this, or even if you're just kind of, you know, you've been listening to the Metal Hammer of Doom and you want to check out what we've been reviewing there, like Fear Factory or Dr. Colossus or Bongzilla or whatever, you go ahead and click the link in our description for getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network. That's getamazonmusic.com/W2M Network for a free 30 days on us. You click the link, you fill out the information, you get a free 30 days, and then when it's over, you can choose to keep it. Pay the monthly fee like you do for Spotify or Apple Music, or you can get rid of it. There's no contract. There's no fuss, no muss, but it's a great service. We use it all the time. I've been talking lately about how we play with it on the Metal Hammer of Doom now and play, you know, to do like extra stuff. Like we, on the Fear Factory show, we did a medley of old Fear Factory songs, and we just played it right from the Amazon Music site. It's a great site. We use it all the time. Wildly encourage you to use it. And if you do, it helps us out. It helps keeps the podcast going. And with that, let's go ahead and do the money.
Here comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. All righty. So I believe this won the weekend. That was the big headline. As a matter of fact, that it topped Black Widow, which was surprising for some people. I guess they figured Black Widow would sweep. I predicted this. I said it during the Black Widow review that Black Widow was not going to retain the top spot in the weekend, and it did not. Space Jam won the weekend. At the time of this recording, it on a budget of $150 million. It's currently its box office receipts. And again, it's much like Black Widow because of, you know, its day and date on HBO Max, which is not. Did not cost you anything extra. It comes with your regular subscription, so it's a little hard to dig into the analytics there. But in terms of box office receipts, it's currently earned $53.2 million off $150 million budget. Black Widow fell from 1-2. Escape Room Tournament of Champions, debuted at number 3. That came in, I think, below projections. F9 The Fast Saga fell from 2-4. Boss Baby, currently day and date on Peacock with no extra fee, 3-5. The Forever Purge, 4-6. Quiet Place Part 2, 5-7. This Anthony Bourdain documentary debuted at number 8. Cruella, still in the top 10, fell from 6-9. And Pig, which apparently is getting outstanding reviews from Neon Studios, debuted at number 10. My wife's friend said, well, we're on vacation. She said, you guys should just take off and go see a movie. I'm like, yeah, I know Snake Eyes will be out by then, but we're going to go see Pig instead. I can't wait to see this thing.
Yeah, who would have thought Nicolas Cage going after guys who kidnapped his pet pig?
Yeah, apparently Nick Cage, there's an article that came out recently, which had there not been money to talk about, I would have actually talked to you about this. Nick Cage, there was an article that like Nick Cage fears Hollywood at this point and just doesn't want to do big studio pictures anymore. He wants to do, you know, stellar artsy jobs like Pig and Jiu-Jitsu. Jiu-Jitsu. There it is.
I didn't have to bring that up.
I'm a tumor. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard dropped from 7-10. My number one picture of the year right now, Zola, fell from 10-12. And you can check out my review on TikTok. Plug. Peter Rabbit 2, 8-13. In the Heights, not doing well. that was a big news item over the past month or so. That despite this being a Lin-Manuel Miranda joint and all of that, and this being really like positive for the Latino community, no one gave a shit. Dropped from 11-14. The Conjuring, apparently it not only not did well in theaters, it did not do well on HBO Max either, from what I've read. The Conjuring dropped from 9-15. The documentary about the other festival the same year as Woodstock dropped from 12-16. That was Summer of Soul.
Saw that, right?
I did. It was great, fantastic. It's, my wife and I watched that on Thursday documentary date night. It's a thing we do. 12 Mighty Orphans, 14-17. Spirit Untamed, 13-18. Queen Bees, 15-19. I Carry With Me, 19-20. And there were two other limited releases that debuted. Mama Weed at number 25. And Can You Bring It? Bill T. Jones and D-Man in the Waters, whatever this is. Debuted at number 30.
Worldwide. I still can't believe the Spirit Untamed got a theatrical release. I remember watching the trailer for them, like, you made a movie specifically targeting tween girls going through their horsey phase, and you actually think this is good enough for a wide release.
I made my kids watch it, and I said, hey, do you guys want to do like a TikTok or anything? You guys want to talk about it? They were like, no, we don't. It was fine. Can we move on now? My daughter's like, can I go back to watching My Hero Macadamia now? All right.
It sounded like you said macadamia.
I might have. all right, here's where we stand at the worldwide box office. I'm just going to read the top 10 here. Hi, Mom, number 1. Detective Chinatown, number 3. These are the Avengers Endgame of this list for 2021. My God, no movement at all year. However, F9 currently in the third spot at almost $600 million. So good for F9. Godzilla versus Kong keeping its spot at 4 with $463 million. Quiet Place 2 is the little engine that could at $285 million. Black Widow moving up at number 6. Cruella still in the top 10 at $219 million and getting a sequel because God hates us. The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It is at number 8 at $191 million. Impasse. No idea. Number 9 and A Writer's Odyssey at 10. Some highlights here real quick. Peter Rabbit at 145. Tom and Jerry, 125. Still beating Ryan the Last Dragon at 121. I just like to twist the nipple of Disney just reading that out loud. Wrath of Man, 100 million. Which is doing better than Mortal Kombat, which is stuck at less than 100 million. 83.
That hurts.
Poor Mortal Kombat. Space Jam sits between Nobody and Break Through the Darkness at 53 million and 28 on the list. Forever Purge, Boss Baby, 48 million apiece.
Boss Baby's doing better than In the Heights. Ow.
Yeah, I mention no one gave a shit? Speaking of no one giving a shit, Spiral, 37 million.
We took that apart as well and explained why that didn't work.
Yeah. And that's about it. There's some other big releases on here, but now we're getting into like less than 20 million. It's not even worth talking about. This weekend, there are two movies debuting. We've got Old from M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong and Snake Eyes. What do you think's going to end up winning the weekend on this one? I mean, we're not going to get to Old until I get back from vacation, which is a week from Thursday, and then Snake Eyes the following Tuesday with me and Jason Teasley. So it'll be a little hard to talk about the money in both of those cases since it'll be so far past the weekend. But I will give you an opportunity to take a wild guess here. Who do you think wins the weekend? M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong or Toys?
Toys.
Tell me why.
Better marketing.
Okay. Just think it, you think my son can't wait. I've been talking about this for a while. My son can't wait for Snake Eyes. So I'm wondering if that has sort of if he's sort of a canary in the coal mine that boys and their dads are going to go see Snake Eyes. And let me ask you this. And we might revisit this when we talk about Old, and then we'll move on to Rotten Tomatoes. Do you think M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong isn't quite the draw he used to be? You know, like he hit big for a while there, but then he had a lot of misses. And I'm just wondering now if he's not quite the draw he once was.
Shyamalan is in a very precarious place because first he makes two really, really good films, Sixth Sense and Unbreakable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get Signs and we get The Happening and the Lady Village. In the Water and The Village and every, and it's just like, no, 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 no.
And then somewhere in there was Avatar The Last Airbender. And I think at that point, people wanted to burn his house down.
Avatar The Last Airbender wanted to burn down the entire world. Every time I hear about that movie, I just think, okay, so no one at Nickelodeon, no one at Paramount, none of the actors, none of the crew members, no one went up to Shyamalan and said, you know, maybe this is a bad idea. But then we get, I'm trying to remember that one movie with the grandparents, which was actually pretty decent.
Yeah. I can't remember the name now, but everyone said that like that was return to form for Shyamalan Ding Dong.
Yeah. And Glass, well, not majorly, you know, brought, you know, groundbreaking good, was considered to be pretty decent. So mm-hmm. He's in a very weird spot right now. He's not back at this amazing director, and honestly, I don't even know if he can be considered an amazing director again, considering that the movies he gave us in between those were not just bad, they were legendary levels of bad.
Right. So I would tend to agree with you. I think Snake Eyes wins the weekend, and relevant to the topic at hand. Space Jam had its moment in the sun. It got major headlines because Black Widow tanked in its second week. It was like, well, everyone that went to see this saw it, and that's the end. It's like, we're all done here, moving on to Shang-Chi. I think we're in this sort of rapid succession where whatever the new movie is wins the weekend. So we figure Snake Eyes wins this weekend, Jungle Cruise wins the following weekend, then Suicide Squad, and then we go on from there. Free Guy, I think, is after that. So that's that.
Sorry, Disney, but oh my God, do you have any idea how many videos have been posted blaming Black Widow's poor success on the fact that it's a female-led superhero movie?
That's a great plug for the show that my wife and her friend did on a feminist perspective and discussion on Black Widow, where they actually talked about, in a very nice way, in a very intelligent way, how Hollywood's attempt to patronize women is missing the mark entirely. It is amazing that Hollywood, in an effort to try to put out more movies to attract women to theaters, drives the men away and still can't get women to watch them, because this is not what women want to watch, as my wife and Elizabeth say very eloquently on their Black Widow discussion and review. So check that out, plug, plug. All right, and with that, Alexis.
Are you ready? No! I said, are you ready?
Oh my. No! God, please, no! 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 No!
I feel like the score on this says everything you need to know about this movie. 32% rotten critical score and an 81% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. That's freaking hilarious to me. All right, so yeah, the critics absolutely hated this thing. Let's see if anyone liked it and see if we agree with what they liked here. Mike McGranigan of Isle of Seat. LeBron James proves to have plenty of charisma on screen, even if Daniel Day-Lewis doesn't need to worry about being overtaken in the world-class acting department. That was nice of him to say.
Well, again, that's what we pointed out. It's like we said that he's charismatic and charismatic, and he's got a good sense of humor and decent comedic timing. So, yeah. I mean, he's not I can't think of any moments on screen where I looked at James and I thought, oh, God, why didn't they hire an acting coach or something?
Yeah, totally. Susanna Guzman de la O of Cine Premiere. More than a tribute to LeBron James, Space Jam A New Legacy is a veneration of nostalgia. I don't think nostalgia was venerated here. I think it was just shown as an option to watch amongst all the streaming services.
More or less. I mean, I guess I would call it that if you actually want to take the time to pause and try to find all the little background characters, which I may or may not have done.
Okay. Matthew Rosa of MatthewRosa.com. Space Jam A New Legacy did something I had not anticipated. It was sweet, smart, funny, and engaging movie. I actually more or less agree with that.
I wouldn't really call it engaging, but sweet, smart, funny. Yeah, I'd call it that.
Moving on here. Chris Ager of Screen Rant. Space Jam A New Legacy is a fun family movie bolstered by a good heart and strong visuals that make up for lack of originality. I feel like he was shooting for the DVD cover here.
Yeah, I believe the phrase we officially call that is the tick bird reviews.
Yeah.
When it's clear they wrote something just because they want to get featured on the poster or the DVD.
Patrick McDonald of WBGR-FM, 93.7 Monroe, Wisconsin. Yes, there is too much slapdashery in this. I feel like I'm inside a pinball machine movie. But it is great laugh, surprising heart, and who knew that King James could act? Okay, more or less.
That's actually insanely accurate.
Casey Chong of The Cinemaholic. Given the current hardship of living in the pandemic era, it's good to watch stream a film like this. The kind that simply wants you to sit back and enjoy the show no matter how silly it is. My only problem with that is, as a reviewer, you're supposed to, you know, be a bit more critical. That's the kind of shit I hear from my coworkers when we quickly talk about a movie as we're passing each other in the hallway.
Maybe that's just kind of what this movie is. It's not groundbreaking. It's not ungodly terrible, but it's fun. It's just a nice little fun passerby film. And you know what? Some films are going to be like that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I don't disagree with you. It's also why we didn't spend 10 hours discussing it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, here's some things that worked and here's some things that didn't.
Well, that and on. I knew you would kill me if I started talking about all the Easter eggs and how I squeed when I saw Yakko, Wakko, and Dot sitting on top of Marvin the Martian's spaceship.
You can tell you what, you can do a solo audio on that and just send it to me. And I'll be like, Alexis, list things in a movie. I will gladly put that up for you.
Please continue with the reviews.
Moving on. Daniel M. Kimmel of North Shore Movies. Space Jam A New Legacy is more a product than a story that 6 credited writers were burning to tell. But if you felt the need to upgrade a premise involving an NBA legend with a bunch of cartoon characters, it gets the job done. Aw, sir, you don't like your job. Is that the problem here? Jesus. Good God.
Why don't you read some of the rotten reviews? I mean, again, this is one of those weird movies where we agreed it's not good, but we can't really find a lot that's majorly wrong with it. So let's hear what some of the negative reviews say and see if we agree with those as well.
Okay, cool. We'll do a few of those and then we'll call it a day. Mm-hmm. Rendy Jones of Rendy Reviews. With no satire or a lick of creativity to compensate, Space Jam A New Legacy stares into the eyes of capitalism and embraces it with open arms. All right, you communist. I don't know. Jesus Christ, what do you want? To be The Big Short?
And for the record, this is not... No, I still stand by that the first Space Jam was the epitome of capitalism. This one, I honestly don't think it is.
Matthew Razick of Flixis.com. Space Jam, A New Legacy is anything but new as it rehashes the original film storyline and pulls half its jokes from WB references.
Yay to the latter and nay to the former.
Agreed. Johnny Oleksinski, New York Post, top critic, Red Star. In the pantheon of misguided sequels and reboots, A New Legacy is right up there with Paul Blart, Mall Cop 2, and Little Fockers.
Okay, no, this movie is nowhere near as painful as that.
Yeah, no, I wasn't cringing at any time.
Yeah, thank you, but there are no moments where we have to deal with Robert De Niro getting a needle jammed in his penis.
Ouch. Rob Dean of Bullseye.com, keeping up with this same theme here. Make no mistake, Space Jam, A New Legacy is painful to watch. All right, you're writing for Bullseye.com. Maybe don't watch this one then. Go watch Pig, you snob. Dolce Pierce of The Sun UK, The Snyderverse.
No, it says The Serververse.
Sorry, you're right. Sorry. I take back my snort for the moment at least. Oh, wait, this is a fresh one. Ah, fuck it. The Serververse also looks surprisingly low budget, and there's way too much basketball, not just for us Brits. Some neat moments, but not a slam dunk. Wow, that's a fresh review.
I was going to say, wait, what?
Gabriel
the server, and for the record, the Serververse does not look surprisingly low budget. They poured their heart and all of their bank account into that CGI budget, and frankly... Yeah. I'll just say this. I did kind of wish that the Looney Tunes stayed 2D animated just because I thought they looked better, but they looked great with this 3D animation.
Yeah, I was going to say, if anything, they spent the most of the budget outside of LeBron's salary on the CGI. They had to, but you don't have a movie.
Yeah, no, this movie looks amazing. And I think we talked about how, you know, it's like if you're just looking for something fun and visual to enjoy, yeah, this is Dangling Keys the movie.
All right, this is the last one, and then we're done. Frank Swiletek, one guy's opinion. Sure.
Why not?
Watching Space Jam, A New Legacy is like being trapped in an explosion at a paint store. The experience is visually painful and not funny at all. All righty then.
Okay, I almost give it to the explosion at the paint store, because that's kind of funny. And again, we talked about how this is a very in-your-face, bright, colorful, crazy movie. But it's not painful.
No.
And there are several scenes that were very, very funny.
I don't understand. If you're unless you're like 70 and you're still doing this, if you're a movie critic, you have to be in like your 20s or 30s at this point. If you're actively reviewing movies. I mean, I'm 45, and I'm also not a professional reviewer. I'm one of many assholes with a podcast. But you had to have, like, in the 20 to 30 years that cinema has existed. So we're talking, like, the early 2000s and 90s here in this space of time. We've had sequels and reboots the entire time. We've had movies heavily laden with product. The Transformers movie existed during this time period, where people are openly drinking a beer and turning to the camera. You know,
I'm sorry, no one will ever forgive that scene with Mark Wahlberg and the beer truck.
Exactly. So my question to these people who are like, this movie is painful to watch, how did you not see? You lived in an era where this sort of thing it was an ongoing cultural phenomena. Like, Space Jam, A New Legacy isn't new. It is one of many products coming down a line of similar things. Whether it's F9 or Star Wars, these have all been things that have existed in the time that, and this is the point that I'm trying to make, in the time that you decided after high school that you were going to be a professional movie critic. And if you thought you were only going to be picking from the freshest fruit at the orchard, that you weren't going to have to review some of the products that Hollywood puts out, boy, were you fooling yourself. And some of these reviews, like, they get so much on their high horse about, like, oh my God, it was so painful to watch these things. I just wish Hollywood would create art. I don't understand why you got into this field in the first place.
Yeah.
What did you think was going to happen here? Part of your job as a reviewer is you review all things. So, I mean, I don't know. I just retire that line. This was painful to watch. Then maybe go work on an oil rig or something. Something a little less painful, I guess.
You know what? I've used the whole it's painful to watch on several occasions on this show, but this movie was not painful. Mm-hmm. I feel like that line's just become about as overused as a certain podcaster on the Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network tends to overuse a certain word like awful. Not saying names.
Very subtle. Subtle as an anvil to the head. Speaking of Looney Tunes. All right, the folks. I just want to, I forgot to do this earlier. Before we go, I want to remind you that another one of our great sponsors here on the show is Grammarly. Grammarly's AI-powered products help people communicate more effectively. Grammarly helps you write mistake-free on Gmail, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and nearly anywhere else you write on the web. Grammarly corrects hundreds of grammar, punctuation, and spelling mistakes while also catching contextual errors, improving your vocabulary, and suggesting style improvements. To download Grammarly today, go to getgrammarly.com/W2M Network. Again, that's getgrammarly.com/W2M Network to download Grammarly for free. All right, go ahead and do your plugs, Alexis.
All right, Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. We just wrapped up our first full weekend convention in over a year. Felt so good to finally be... knocked my own headset off.
Yeah, you look like you were having a really good time from the pictures you posted.
Absolutely. Although I am clearly out of practice because A, load in and load out took so much longer for me than it should have, and B, I crashed so hard Sunday night after I got home. Face plant on the couch. I didn't wake up till 5 a.m. when the dogs woke me up to go outside.
Nice.
I just wore myself out. I got to get back into practice for this. But yes, we did Crypticon in Kansas City, horror-related convention. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people came out. Really enjoyed it. Next on the docket, we are going to be heading to Orlando. We're going to be working MegaCon. This is our first time working that show. Excited about it. Going to have a lot of fun, especially since I'm going down a week early to enjoy Disney World. After which we will be appearing back in Kansas City for Planet Comic Con. That's our home show. Looking forward to it. As always, you can find everything in our shops on Etsy and Handmade at Amazon. And you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. That is Honeysuckle Rose Creations, where fashion meets fandom at the intersection of geek and chic.
All right, and for more of Alexis Haina on the network, first, her and Jesse host a trivia show. This last one was WB Animation because we were focusing on Space Jam-related stuff. So that's up in the archive. Alexis and I reviewed Looney Tunes shorts from HBO Max Season 2. That's up in the archives as well. Sean and I will have a review of the 96 Space Jam movie later this week. Next week, Alexis will be joining myself and a few others to review and compare M. Night Shyamalan's Old to the graphic novel from which it was at least inspired by, if not directly adapted, Sandcastles, which came out, I believe, in 2010. Alexis will also be reviewing with us Jungle Cruise. And then just, I don't think you're on Suicide Squad, at least last time I checked. Maybe you are. I don't remember. I have to look at my notes.
I think I bowed out of Suicide Squad because I will be in Orlando at that point. And for the record, I'll still do Jungle Cruise with you, but you may have to put up an avatar for me because I'm probably going to be driving when that happens.
No, I want you to hold your phone while you're doing it.
Safety procedures? What's that? No, I'm sorry, officer. Of course I wasn't paying attention to my driving. Working for Mark Rattlitch is far more important than people's lives.
Listen, officer, I'm trying to do a podcast here. What did you think of Jungle Cruise?
And I will be spending my entire vacation for Walt Disney World in jail.
Yes, at the Orange County correctional facility. Anyway, Alexis with a pretty avatar up will be on a Jungle Cruise review. She's skipping Suicide Squad, but it'll be just me and her for Free Guy when that comes out. So those are the next couple of reviews here on the Rattlegion Broadcasting Network. All right, that's all for me. Thanks. I'm driving. For Alexis Haina, I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.